Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's president-elect Joseph Boakai was sworn in on Monday as the country's 26th elected head of state.
Let us restore inclusivity, transparency, accountability to governance at all levels of our society. We must discourage the culture of unfinished business.
Malawi and Tanzania end trade war over crop import ban. U.S. forces in Middle East face steady drumbeat of attacks. A court has again denied Zimbabwe's opposition CCC candidates the opportunity to compete in the February 3rd by-elections.
Those recalled members of parliament from the CCC are running in these by-elections under the same banner of the CCC, which they know is going to be a problem.
And Mukbio Yabaro will update us with the latest from the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations in Ivory Coast. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's president-elect Joseph Nyuma Boakai was sworn in on Monday as the country's 26th president in the capital, Monrovia. As Denise Nipson reports, the ceremony was temporarily interrupted when he suffered heat exhaustion while delivering his inaugural speech.
79-year-old President Joseph Boakai took the oath of office as the 26th president of Liberia after defeating President George Weah in a close November 2023 runoff election. The ceremony was marked by the placement of national colors all around the capital, Monrovia, while supporters of Boakai's Unity Party wore the gray and white party colors. Several heads of state were also in attendance. In his speech, President Boakai said he had come to rescue the country from endemic corruption and that his administration would not be business as usual.
Let us restore inclusivity, transparency, accountability to governance at all levels of our society, including government. We must discourage the culture of unfinished business, doing things in a haphazard. We must restore dignity and integrity to publishers, favorable remuneration and pension schemes to civil servants. We must restore respect to the law and respect to officers of the law across our three branches of government.
Boakai praised Liberia's peaceful transfer of power and stressed the need for unity across the country.
Our agenda sets broad goals for governance, an institutional position for economic development and sustained growth, including increased productivity. It will ensure we rebuild the broken infrastructure and improve the delivery of health social services, such as combating the drug epidemic of very like youth and eating away the future of our country.
Meanwhile, the inauguration was interrupted when the president apparently suffered heat exhaustion while reading his 23-page speech and was assisted off the podium by security. Liberians have been expressing mixed reaction about the incident on social media. Patience Davis blames the First Lady for not taking responsibility for her husband's welfare.
I want to say you're negligent. From the First Lady.
Even though you got nothing to do with your government, but like your husband, I don't want your husband leaving, you also leaving. You know some things about your husband. Like, even if the security don't carry water, you should be the one to carry water. And our whole platform will look at it today with no water.
Nicholas Kofar blames the organizers.
What actually contributed to the woman having the shock of heat, leaving to short breath, or whatever it is, I will blame that on the planner of the program. The planner should have known better to have a due, a comfortable area where it's fully ventilated to have the old man exercise his duties.
The chairperson of the inaugural committee and veteran Liberian musician Miata Famule attributes the incident to the influx of journalists and protocol blunders. The office of the president announced late Monday that doctors declared he was in good condition after suffering from heat exhaustion during the ceremony. Meanwhile, the president has made key nominations in government and named Bwema Kamara Minister of Finance and Development Planning, Sylvester Grisby, Minister of State for Presidential Affairs, Samuel Kofi Woods, National Security Advisor, Gregory Coleman, Police Inspector General, and Sam Gay, Director Executive Protective Service. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipsin in Monrovia, Liberia.
Meanwhile, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, U.S. representative to the United Nations, who is head of the U.S. delegation, delivered keynote remarks at the official inaugural ball on Monday night in Monrovia, saying the United States looks forward to working with Liberia as both countries strengthen their ties. In Zimbabwe, it appears candidates for main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, also known as Triple C, have again been denied the opportunity to compete in the February 3rd by-elections. This after a high court judge upheld another motion by Singezo Shabangu to remove all CCC members of parliament and councillors from the February 3rd ballot because they had ceased to be members of the coalition. Tendai Ruben Bofana is a Zimbabwe social justice advocate and writer. He tells me the leadership of the CCC is to blame for the disarray in the party.
The state of the Triple C, the Citizens Coalition for Change, is pathetic to say the least. They're in sixes and sevens. There's so much disarray and disorganization. At the moment, it's very hard to tell what is going on. As you rightly said, with all these recalls that we have been seeing from last year being instituted by these sevens or Shabangu, who claims to be their interim secretary general, we have seen that a lot of members of parliament have been recalled. We already had the by-election last year, or 9 December, and we're scheduled to have another by-election for MPs, members of parliament, early February this year. And he is already threatening to recall more members of parliament and councillors. And also, what is even more confusing is that those recalled members of parliament from the Triple C are running in these by-elections under the same banner of the Triple C, which they know is going to be a problem. We've already seen that last year in the December 9th by-elections, where the court at the last minute barred them from participating. And yet they are repeating the same mistake. Why are they not, for instance, standing as independents so that they can have that independence when they're in parliament, where they will not be able to be recalled by anyone?
So what can you tell us about this suggestion by the spokesperson for President Mnangagwa, Mr. Charamba, suggesting that perhaps the president should take over the opposition party because of the problems it has? Is this possible legally?
When it comes to the presidential spokesman, George Charamba, that guy is just excitable. What I said about the Triple C becoming a circus, I can actually say the country itself is a circus, and it has been a circus for a long time. We do not have people who are serious anymore. So if you go through the Twitter posts or X posts that are written by someone who's supposed to be the presidential spokesperson. We have seen presidential spokesperson. We have seen in the United States, you know, the White House spokesperson and so forth. They are very serious. But in Zimbabwe, the guy just posts whatever rubbish he wants. He can insult people. He can threaten people. Now for him to suggest that the president of another political party, Mnangagwa is the president of ZANU-PF, the ruling party, can take over and opposition party. That is a bit crazy. But maybe it's not that crazy. Why do I say so? As I said in my previous statement, what is really going on in the Triple C? Who is really behind these recalls? You know, who's behind Shabangu? Who is even behind Chamisa? Why is Chamisa not standing up against these recalls instead of just posting biblical verses on X, formerly Twitter? Why isn't he taking any action? Why is he not doing something that people can say, okay, the guy is trying his best, but maybe he's facing a formidable onslaught, but he's doing nothing.
Tendai Rumi Bofana is a Zimbabwe social justice advocate and writer. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. Malawi and Tanzania have lifted a ban the two countries imposed last month on importing each other's crops. Malawi had banned unmilled maize from Tanzania to avoid maize disease. Tanzania banned Malawi's soybean over disease and on maize seed, saying it contained genetically modified organisms. However, grain traders say the suspension of the ban has come after they lost their business. Lamech Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi's Minister of Agriculture says in a statement that it has lifted the ban. This after Tanzanian authorities announced that the maize lethal necrosis disease has been contained. It says traders can now freely import maize from Tanzania as long as they present necessary authorization and documentation from the governments of Tanzania and Malawi. Tanzania has also responded by lifting its ban on imports of soybeans and maize seed from Malawi. Tanzania's Agriculture Minister Hussein Bashe told local media in Tanzania that they have lifted the ban following diplomatic discussions between the two countries. Grace Mijiga Muhango is the president of the Grain Traders Association of Malawi. She welcomes the lifting of the ban, but says it has come too late.
A lot of people have lost business because if you look at the soya market, which was mostly just transiting in Tanzania into China, you can't go back and start to renegotiate contractual obligation with either the buyer or the supplier.
This month, the maize import ban forced the World Food Program to start mailing 30,000 metric tons of relief maize to Malawi. It imported from Tanzania after the grain was held up by authorities in Arusha. Ronald Chirumba is an expert in crop protection in Malawi. He says although Tanzania has announced that the disease is now contained, it still remains a threat to Malawi.
We cannot stop this disease 100%. We can just put controls, make sure that probably this disease can be delayed coming into the country. Chances are very high that it will still come. That's my opinion.
However, Malawi's Minister of Agriculture says it will be in touch with the Tanzanian authorities and will update the public on changes that may arise if maize disease is detected. The ban came at a time when nearly a quarter of Malawi's population was facing food shortages. Political analyst Sherif Kaisi has advised the two countries to stop exercising what he called a trade war on food.
Soya and the maize is a food for, you know, citizens. So you don't need to play with people's lives. If it is politics, it has really gone very long and out of hand.
Kaisi says Malawi authorities should work to ensure that such a scenario does not happen again. For VOA Africa, I am Lamech Masina in Blantyre.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 23rd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. U.S. efforts to avoid a widening conflict across the Middle East while supporting Israel's war on the U.S.-designated Hamas terrorist group in Gaza is being put to the test. Pentagon officials now say U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria have come under attack 151 times since mid-October, when Iran-backed militia started firing rockets and drones in support of the Palestinians. VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden reports from the Pentagon.
U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria have withstood a steady drumbeat of attacks over the past 3 months, but the Pentagon says what happened Saturday at Iraq's Al-Assad air base was different.
It was a larger scale attack than we have seen before.
Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singh.
We've usually seen, you know, one or two missiles that have landed either nearby a base or, you know, have been, you know, not as close as some of these got. It was just a larger barrage.
Pentagon officials say two Americans were treated for possible traumatic brain injuries and are back at work, and that there was some damage to what they describe as non-critical facilities. An Iraqi soldier was also injured. At the White House, officials promised to make sure Iran-backed groups across the region understand they will pay a price. White House National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby.
We'll continue to do what we have to do to protect our troops and our facilities. We are certainly mindful of the danger.
Back at the Pentagon, Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singh says the U.S. has been clear, even with Iran.
We continue to message both publicly and privately that we don't seek a wider war.
U.S. defense officials, though, acknowledge that so far the militias don't appear ready to back down. Jeff Selden, VOA News, the Pentagon.
Nigeria's tech startups are facing reluctance from investors stemming from the shutdown of some prominent young companies last year. Gibson Emeka has the story from Abuja, Nigeria.
Kingsley Eze co-runs Naira-Z, an e-commerce on-demand logistics startup in Abuja, Nigeria's capital. Despite its record of handling tens of thousands of successful requests, the firm has been largely funded by Eze as well as family and friends. Eze told VOA, even though he's ready for expansion, it's been difficult to secure financing amid the tales of failing startups in the country.
It's been very difficult to raise funds. Investors are cautious. The interest rate hikes in the Western economy is also a contributing factor to that, coupled with a lot of disappointing or not so good outing for a few startups that were like a beacon of hope for the Nigerian startup ecosystem.
Nigeria has been leading growth in African startups. Nevertheless, the sector faced a significant blow in 2023. Prominent startups such as 54Gene, LaserPay, Vibra, Payday, and Hitch went out of business largely over their inability to raise more capital to keep the companies running, losing over 70 million of foreign investors' funds. Abuja-based economist and investment expert Paul Alaji told VOA he blames the collapse on neglect of business principles.
Assumptions is a major bane to startup developments in Africa, especially Nigeria. That the idea works for us does not, and its startups and its technology driven, does not mean the fundamentals of traditional business or a growing business, economic principles behind traditional business should be neglected when it comes to startups.
A recent report by Brighter Bridges, a London-based business intelligence and research firm, showed a 54% drop in funding for startups between January and October of last year in Africa compared with the same period in 2022. Eze said he believes this will make it even harder to navigate the funding terrain. Paystack, a successful Nigerian payment processing company, was acquired by an Irish-American company for $200 million in 2020. According to the venture capitalists in Nigeria, poor infrastructure, lack of accountability by business owners, and the foreign exchange crisis aided the collapse of many startups. For his part, Eze said he will continue to build his business from the revenues it generates. For Gibson Emeka in Abuja, Nigeria, Salim Solomon, VOA News.
At the Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Ivory Coast, they are concluding the final games of the group stage to determine the round of 16. And joining us now from Abidjan is VOA's Mubio Yabaro. Good morning to you, Mubio, and welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Thanks for having me, James.
Bring us up to date. Which countries are going to the Group of 16 and which countries are not?
First and foremost, I just want to say, James, that this Africa Cup of Nations has been one of the most roller coaster ride type of emotional game. You know, we saw it happen in so many games in Group A and Group B that were played yesterday. Now, with that being said, for Group A, it will be Equatorial Guinea and Nigeria coming out of that group. Unfortunately, the host nation, Ivory Coast, lost 4-0 to Equatorial Guinea. And the saddest part about it is that they were in control for a large portion of the game. The very few opportunities that Equatorial Guinea had, they were very clinical and just made Ivory Coast pay by scoring. At the moment, I wouldn't say they're completely out of it just yet because, you know, the way that the tournament works is that the top two teams from each group make it through, but then the top four third-seeded teams will make it through as well. So we'll have to wait until the rest of the groups finish off their match day threes, and then we'll find out which third place teams from each group will be able to make it as well.
What are the chances for Ghana, Nigeria, and Egypt? Where are they?
So Group B also finished playing their match days yesterday. Cape Verde and Egypt played in one of the most exciting games I've seen thus far. Cape Verde went up 1-0. Egypt tied 1-1 and then was able to go ahead 2-1 with only a few minutes left in extra time. Then Cape Verde tied the game to make it a 2-2 draw, not allowing Egypt to get the win that they so much very wanted. Now, on the flip side, because there were so many variables, Ghana and Mozambique were playing on the other side at the exact same time. Ghana was leading 2-0 for the entirety, James, the entirety of the game. IU scored two penalty kicks, one in the 15th minute and one in the 70th minute. And Mozambique was able to score two goals in extra time. Unbelievable. And what that does is that now makes Ghana have to wait, similarly like Ivory Coast, to see if they can make it through being the top seeded third seed as Ivory Coast.
Coming into the tournament, Morocco and a few other countries were the tournament favorite. Based on what you're saying, with all the top countries losing, who are the favorite going into the round of 16?
Wow. Great question, James. Of the top seeded teams, you know, that people were expecting to be doing extremely well, I would say of those, the only team that I kind of see still having that strength is Senegal. The defending champions have not lost any stride. In both their games, they were able to score three goals apiece. So they've scored six goals across two games. So they've really shown me an extremely highly efficient team that plays with excellent chemistry. They're very well coached. They have great discipline. It'll be very, very difficult to beat that team. They will be playing up against Guinea later on today, and Cameroon will be playing Gambia. So for that group, Senegal is at the top with 6 points. Guinea has 4 points with one win and a draw. Cameroon has a draw and a loss, and Gambia has two losses. Now, Cameroon, they can put the game into their own hands and become one of those top-seeded third seeds, or if the goal differential is better for them because of this head-to-head coming up with them and Guinea. If they win this game against Guinea, they will be in the second place.
Mobile, thank you so much again. Let's talk again. You have good news and bad news. I like that.
Absolutely, James. Thank you for having me.
That's Pierce Mugbio Yabaro at the Africa Cup of Nations in the Ivorian capital, Abidjan. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Monday called on the President of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Felix Tshisekedi, to address election concerns after he was sworn in for a new term. The State Department said Blinken, traveling in West Africa, spoke by telephone with Tshisekedi to congratulate him on his victory. The French news agency AFP quotes State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller as saying Blinken encouraged President Tshisekedi to address the concerns raised by election observation missions by taking steps to promote confidence in the democratic process going forward. And that's it for this Tuesday, January 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And we are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty, Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.